Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
An Erio's original.
The worst old person trait is being mad that times change.
Right.
Because I think with music, it's so hard to separate that nostalgia of how you felt when you were 15.
Yes.
Or 13, as I said.
There are certain people that kind of seem to come up a lot, like the Golden Girls.
Yes, the Golden Girls. It's fun to put them in different scenarios, yeah?
Yes.
It's a great thing. I'm really happy doing it. It makes me laugh all the time.
I really laugh, too. It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart. Hi, welcome to The Margaret Cho. I'm Margaret Cho. This is the podcast where we talk to people you know and people you should know. And now we talk to Lindsay Parker, who is an incredible rock journalist and just amazing. Yeah, I'm coming out of the dark. So now you're like kind of like coming at music from so many different angles, working on books, you're working on the radio, you're working on like just in TV, in like every different aspect. What's your favorite way to like sort of talk about music?
Well, it's interesting because it used to really bug me, but now I see it as kind of a strength. So for those who don't know, I work at Yahoo, and this is in no way diss to Yahoo. I'm not dissing my employer, but you know, it's not a music site. I don't work for Pitchfork. I don't work for Mojo or Stereo Gum or Vibe or whatever. I don't work for a specialty site. I can't necessarily assume that people who come to Yahoo are music experts or even fans. And I also can't, you know, assume they have like very deep musical knowledge like you or I do. And I can't even assume they came to anything I wrote or anything I do like from the front door of Yahoo Entertainment or Yahoo Music. A lot of them come in through Yahoo.com. And so my point is I have to figure out ways to make something that they don't necessarily like or know about be interesting because they're not like established fans of this artist. They didn't come because, oh, I really like, you know, let's say I'm writing about the drums. I love the drums, so I want to read an interview with the lead singer of the drums. Like, okay, so I have to think like, okay, what makes, in a non-clickbaity way, because you can go clickbaity with it, but what makes this person or this subject interesting that someone who doesn't give a shit about this artist or has never heard of them or doesn't even like this genre of music would want to read this because everyone has a good story.
Yeah,
it's about storytelling. So, and maybe along the way, if they read the article, they'll check out the music and maybe they'll be turned on. Maybe they won't, but hopefully there'll be a few. They'll be like, oh, I've never heard of this artist or I never liked this artist, but now I'm into it. I used to be like, ah, oh, you know, I really wish I was writing for more music of a more of a music geek audience. Oh, my dream would be to be the editor of Mojo or whatever. But now I'm kind of like, it's kind of fun to figure out what makes an artist interesting to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love that. And then it's also you're giving people an opportunity to like clue in on something that they may not really like pick up. Music is a hard one because it's like
very hard.
People are so set in their ways in terms of music. You don't really like, I never trust like sort of like any kind of source other than my own ears and my taste to guide me to what
taste.
I like. Well, thank you. But it is something like, you know, you get like very set in your ways with music and then you don't want to expand beyond that.
Well, in particular with an older audience, which, you know, quite, and by older, I mean my age, what I mean, Gen X, basically.
Yeah.
People over 40. I read somewhere that they did a study of Spotify listening habits, and they said that no matter what age or demographic a person came from, the majority of music they listened to was music from when they were 13.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were born in 1970, that's music from 1983. If you were born in 1960, it's music from 73. Because that music is when you're young and your brain is open and and you're so hungry for music and music rules your world. And people, and then I read another study that similarly said that most people, at the average age at which they stop actively seeking out listening to new music, is 32, which seems like so friggin' young.
That's so young, yeah.
Super young and depressing. So, you know, Yahoo's audience is an older audience, I would say an over 35 audience for the most part. I would say that is probably true to some degree for SiriusXM too, because it's people, you know, in cars a lot, listening. People who have nice cars that came with Sirius or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a challenge as well, because I see it a lot in comments. Like, just people are like, oh, remember how great music was in 1975? Now it all sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, your parents probably were saying to you, remember how music was so good in 55?
Mm-hmm.
Elvis, that was real music. This Led Zeppelin, listen to, is just a bunch of shouting. This punk stuff is, this rap isn't, this just noise.
Yeah.
So as I age, the worst old person trait is being mad that times change.
Right.
And being and thinking everything from your generation was better or best.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think with music, it's so hard to separate that nostalgia of how you felt when you were 15.
Yes.
Or 13, as I said, with the music itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you're always going to have... And nostalgia's great. Music brings up memories, and we all have songs that remind us of, like, relationships or vacations or things. But at the same time, it's like you have to stay open-minded. It's the fastest thing that'll age you is to think that all music got bad, you know, in 1980, whatever, 1990, whatever.
It's always this thing of like, how do you go and find it? And it's how do you go and you get it? And I think it's like, where do you find new music? Where do you look for it? I mean, it comes to you and then people are like, look at these bands, like come to see our shows. What do you do?
Well, it's interesting as a journalist to answer that question, because I do think that people look to music journalists a lot differently than they did when we were growing up, or how when people in the 60s, 70s were growing up. In the golden age of music journalism, like Rolling Stone and Cream, people look to the writers to be like, this is cool.
Yeah.
You should listen to this. Lester Bangs said this, whatever. And that David Frick said this. And then even like growing up with MTV, you look to MTV and radio stations actually to be like, it was curation. It was like, we're the experts. We're going to tell you what's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of exists, I guess, on streaming services like, you know, Apple or Spotify will say like, here's what to do. But like, all the music is there, so why should you listen to me say this is what you should listen to?
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, music journalism is mostly online now, so, like, when you used to read... I used to read magazines, like, I would get, like, the NME or whatever, and then I would, like, read and write down lists, like, oh, this magazine is describing this music in a way that sounds like something I'd be into.
Yeah.
And then if I saw that record on import or whatever, I'd buy it.
Yeah.
Sometimes without being able to hear it first. I sound so old right now. But, you know, well, maybe I'd get to hear on a listening station. But, you know, I'd go to a record store and I'd buy it based solely on what a music journalist had written about it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I was steered wrong. I used to get sometimes emails like that saying, like, you described this record as being really good, so I bought it. It sucked. I'd be like, sorry. Tried my best. But thanks for giving it. Thanks for at least respecting my opinion.
Yeah, you try. Yeah.
So I don't really do as much review stuff, you know, because of that. Because I just feel like that's become less of a thing where people go like, oh, Pitchfork or Mojo or Rolling Stone said this was good, so I'm gonna buy it. How do I personally, I mean, it's a weird question to ask me how I seek out my music, because I obviously am in the business, so I get sent a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And I have relationships with publicists who will be like, who know me well enough to be like, oh, Lindsay, you should check this out.
Yeah, you love this, yeah.
This is up your alley. I do like the Spotify, just as a civilian, I guess. I do like the Spotify curation lists they do. You get like five of them, and like, and I have issues with Spotify in the sense that it's so great from a consumer perspective.
Right.
But for artists, it really sucks, and I really do. So I feel almost kind of guilty saying I enjoy Spotify, but I do think what they're doing is good in the fact that they'll say, like, based on your listening habits, here's some new music that we think you'll like. They're, it's right about like 75% of the time.
Yeah.
That being said, though, you know, that's a whole other rabbit hole to go down, but they do have to get their shit together in terms of how they pay artists, because it's going to be an unsustainable business model, and if people can't make a decent living. I'm not talking about being like a Beyonce style rock star, but a decent living, a living wage, mm-hmm. being a mid-level musician, which was a really like actually doable thing at one time.
Yeah, it really was.
Only trust fund kids are going to be able to do music, you know?
It's the weirdest thing how much like it's changed, like how we listen to music and how it's sort of like the artists are compensated. It's such a strange thing. Remember CMJ? Was that like what they would put out like a CD that had all of these different songs of the artists that you mm-hmm. just read about, which I thought was just such a great idea. And it really got you involved in different sort of ideas of like, oh, okay, well, now I can sort of embrace this kind of style and learn about it.
Yeah, it's just interesting in the sense of who are the kids? I sound like so old, but what are the kids when they're interested in music? Who are they turning to for recommendations? Is it the curation that comes from an algorithm? Is it, you know, social media? Is it like, I know mm-hmm. it does help when someone who's got a really huge following, whether on social media, whether it's like Adam Lambert or BTS or Taylor Swift mm-hmm. or Shawn Mendes or whoever, like, tweets or says something like, check out my friend's music, or Adam Lambert's very good at that. He always is saying like, listening to this.
Oh yeah.
And I think, you know, I would think that would move the needle, because it's like people have this celebrity worship but also like trust what a musician says. I don't mm-hmm. know though. It's definitely moved away from a model of people thinking that DJs or music journalists or VJs or any kind of like media personality is the one that holds the key. And that's good and bad. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I don't want to go down, like I said, one of the worst old person traits is being mad that things change. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say it's all bad. I was talking to someone who's, I guess, a millennial the other day, someone in there, like, I think he was 31. And I said, you know, I would have loved to have grown up with YouTube and Spotify and mm-hmm. and the internet, let's face uh-huh. it, where like if I was hearing about some band that people were saying, oh, it was really cool, you should check out, I could go online and like watch their video right then mm-hmm. and go on a streaming service or download service and check out a couple songs right then and
right.
get, you know, I was so insatiably curious about artists, not just their music but everything about them. It's why I wanted to be a journalist, that to have had that kind of information at my fingertips, while it can be overwhelming, God, I would have fucking loved it. I would have loved it.
Yeah,
you know, I don't, it can be like, how do you figure, you know, call the bad from the good, but I would have loved that sort of access. It was hard mm-hmm. to find music. I mean, maybe that's something that made it more exciting for us, and that there was some mystique to it, but it was hard to, it was all word of mouth or what a record store employee said.
You would like look at pictures and kind of like deduce, oh, I'll probably like this mm-hmm. because they look so cool. Like,
I totally used to do that.
Yeah, if it was like the Mission UK or like mm-hmm. Susie the Banshees or, you know, whatever, like you were sort of like looking at the record store. Like, I remember kind of being drawn towards like those kinds of like displays. So there would be like something like, yeah, Mission UK is a very good example of like the look drawing you into a feeling. Yeah.
Tower Strength was like the cashmere of goth, that song.
Uh-huh.
So
I love
epic.
I love it.
Yeah, and Sisters of Mercy too. I really love them too.
I love them too. And any of that kind of like that dark wave sort of British goth stuff, and of course everybody that sort of looked like the Cure, yeah. I wanted to be a part of.
That was a genre, you know. It's so true. I mean, it might sound shallow to say, but when I was a kid, I often would figure out that I would probably like a band because of how they looked in their photo.
Yeah.
And about 80% of the time, it was true.
Yeah, and like if they were in a cemetery, I'm probably going to like that record.
Yes, or if they had, you know, a lot of eyeliner on.
Yeah, if it was perfectly. A man with eyeliner, too.
I remember, I actually, the first time I ever saw a picture of Robert Smith was, remember the magazine Smash Hits?
Of course, yes.
I still have this pin up, literally pinned to my fridge at home.
So
because
great.
It was a picture of him. I'm going to say, I'd heard maybe some Cure music before, but didn't really know what Robert looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a picture of him with his chin in his hands, and his hair is perfectly done. His eyeliner is perfectly done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this was probably around the Love Cats era.
Oh, I love
it. So like 84, mm-hmm. 83. And it was just a striking picture. He looked really cute and really perfect and really exotic. And mm-hmm. I just went like, I want all the records by this artist
now.
And then strangely, the first one I ever got was The Top, which is a really weird Cure album to start mm-hmm. with, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. And Duran Duran were the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I grew up in the video age, so it's like the way a band looked and mm-hmm. presented themselves with the fashion and their videos. I didn't separate the two.
Yeah. Well, Duran Duran, they were just so like James Bond. Like it was so exotic with their fedoras, and then they were sort of like in this thing of they were doing stuff in Sri Lanka, uh-huh. and it just looks so like. Like, are they like trading silks and spices? What's happening? Like, what are they selling and buying? And where's this model coming from? And why is there elephants? There's so many things that, like, I think I wanted to travel.
Why is there elephants?
Yeah, there's elephants.
Actually, what's really sad or funny, however you want to see it, is I went on a cruise to Antigua many, many years ago, and that was all I cared about was the fact that Duran Duran had shot the Rio video there. That yes. and that Eric Clapton had a rehab center there. It was like my two reference points.
That's right.
But yeah, actually, do you remember the Z channel, the cable
yes.
channel?
Yes.
That's the first time I saw a Duran Duran video.
Mm-hmm.
It was Hungry Like the Wolf. And the Z Channel show, for those who don't know, they like, it was before HBO, whatever. It was like the first, at least in California, the first like cable channel that showed videos, or mm-hmm. sorry, that showed movies. But, you know, they started everything on the hour or on the half hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not all movies are exactly a certain length. So they'd fill up the gaps in between with music videos and random like cartoons and shorts.
Yeah.
And I was watching the Z Channel and Hungry Like the Wolf came on. And I actually thought it was a film. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, some Raiders of the Lost Ark
yeah.
wannabe movie is starting now. Because that's what it looked like. Mm-hmm. And then when it ended 3 minutes later, I was like, I was just getting into that.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I was hooked from that moment on. So yeah, the image was always important. Interestingly, I interviewed John Taylor recently, and he doesn't know where that fedora hat is. I'm like, it should be in a friggin' museum.
I mean,
it should be.
Yeah, where is it?
It was Russell Mulcahy, the director's hat.
Oh, okay.
And I could do a whole podcast about him. He directed like everything good. He directed the I'm Still Standing video by Elton John.
That's a great one.
Which is like amazing. But anyway, he gave the hat to Simon Le Bon to wear in the video. Mm-hmm. And then John took it from Simon. He's like, nope, this is mine.
Yeah.
And it became such a big part of John's look. But he doesn't know where the hat is now.
Yeah, that's such an iconic hat. Also with Simon's like weird like necklace. It's mm-hmm. like a charm. It's like a ship. Is it like
looks like an acorn or something.
Yeah.
It's like a bulbous.
Some sort of like weird ship. Acorn. I was like, what is that thing that he's wearing?
There's a scene where he throws his head back and he's got like the tiger scratches across his neck, so you get a good look at it.
Yeah.
And isn't it funny how like just little details like that like are seared into our brains, like weird Simon Le Bon pendant or a hat or a flick of eyeliner. Like you don't forget it 30 years later.
Well, and I liked always that their pants, like the belt was kind of unclear. Like, is it a sash? Is it like tied on the side? Like, how are they holding their pants up? The architectural, like kind of clothing that they all wore when you're sort of going from Rio to Seven and the Ragged Tiger.
They got too Mad Maxy at that time.
Yeah,
for
they
me.
Got very
I was
like
I don't want to see them looking like action heroes. I want to see them looking like they just lie on yachts all day with Patrick Nagel women come to life.
I like that sort of primary color, kind of like Antigua, that kind of when they're on the ships.
Yeah, not this earth tone shit.
The earth tone thing was like really, then it turns into this thing where it is maybe Russell Mulcahy if it's that kind of Wild Boys look, mm-hmm. because then it starts to look like I Am the Warrior.
Yes.
You know that video by Scandal?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like in a modern ballet.
Shooting
but everything's
down the bank, the walls of heartache, bang, bang.
Bang, bang. With that, that's like ballet, but...
There was a weird, around that time, I guess it was like the mid-80s, 84, 85, there was a whole weird like kind of apocalyptic thing. I don't know if it was a Mad Max thing. I don't know if it was because we were all afraid about the Cold War and the fact that we might all soon be living in a post-apocalyptic age soon. But like, there was like stuff like the Love is a Battlefield video where like Pat Benatar's all like dressed in rags and she's some kind of like, you know, space hooker. But like she's, you know, like it's, I don't know what era it's supposed to take place in, but there's all these like, it was sort of like this dystopian thing.
It is very
and
dystopian.
And then all of the videos from the Arena, Seven the Ragged Tiger era.
But you know what I do think the dystopian thing comes from is I think it's Vivian Westwood and Seditionaries. So it was sort of after, Vivian Westwood with the orb. But it's after kind of like that big first sort of thing with all the buckles. And then it's like the look of...
I guess something's changed because this should be a video podcast because I'm literally wearing buckled
the
shoes
buckles.
And a Vivian Westwood necklace. And if you see over there, Margaret, I have my Vivian Westwood squiggle purse.
I love.
I'm super into Vivian Westwood.
I love her.
But I think you're right.
I think it's Seditionaries, which is sort of the collection that was after World's End. So everything was like earth tones and it looked dirty and it looked like the pirates had been in a shipwreck.
The pirate thing, yeah. It's like before the pirate thing was a little dandier, like that adamant look.
Yeah, it was very adamant.
And then it was kind of like, yeah, they've been at sea for a while and they've gone scurvy.
Yeah, they need limes really badly, and it's very dusty.
I guess I didn't like that as much because I didn't want to see maybe my boys in Duran Duran looking like they were struggling.
In distress.
I didn't want to see them in the desert with some weird, like, you know, dinosaur child giving Simon Le Bon water because he's parched lying on the sand. I want to see him on a yacht with a yellow drink enjoying himself.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what we would hope for our rock stars. But then, when Simon's like strapped, kind of crucified on this windmill
on the Wild Boys video.
Yeah. He almost drowned.
He did. He's almost drowned a couple times. He almost drowned in the Wild Boys video when he was on that like wheel of fish.
Yes.
To quote Weird Al, wheel of fish. And then his head keeps going in the water piranhas are... that's what I'm saying. It was scary. I didn't want this version of Duran Duran. I liked it at the time because at the time Duran Duran would have done anything and I would have been fine with it. They could have done like, you know, an evangelical gospel album. I would have been like, well, I guess I'm a Christian now because Duran Duran says it's the case. They were my religion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he almost drowned when his head got caught. The wheel, they couldn't unstrap him from the wheel and the wheel stalled.
Stuck.
And then he almost drowned
when he
yachting.
Was in that boat race.
Yeah, so see, yachting actually does have a dark side.
A dark side, which
and maybe that
he
was
drowned.
Yeah.
But it's scary. They also did the weird New Moon on Monday video, which is kind of like, what is it? It's a little bit Cold War, but it's also more like, I don't know, is it French, maybe like French Resistance?
Okay, so I know a good amount about this, and there's a whole like blog post that breaks down this video scene by scene.
Okay,
I'll find it later. It's some very dedicated fan, but it wrote it. But this was one of the first videos they'd done in a while that Russell didn't do. He was not available or something, so they went ahead with someone else. And I know it's like the video that Duran Duran, at least from that era, have said they like the least.
Mm-hmm.
It got edited a bunch of different times. I know I did not imagine that I saw different versions on MTV. I think they kept going back to it. And it used to have a really long intro where
there was like French,
he's
like
watching
theater.
Simon Le Bon's like watching a play.
Yeah.
And you know what's really pathetic / kind of awesome is I remember wanting to know that entire... I don't speak French. I took Spanish in high school because I grew up in LA. So that's an actual language you might actually use.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I wrote it all down phonetically.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Blah, blah, blah. I don't remember what it was. I listened. I had, a VCR. I taped the video. I played it over and phonetically wrote down. Like, it's this kind of like Marcel Mosso, but like he talks. So he's not a mime. But like some kind of like... Joel Grey cabaret.
It is very Joel Grey, yeah.
And he's like, blah, 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 blah. And I wrote it all down so I could recite it phonetically. Still don't know what it means.
Yeah.
That's how much of a Durani I was.
It's so great.
And I do, there's a couple other things about the video. Okay, a lot of it doesn't make sense. There's sort of like, it's this kind of espionage, like Russian Dr. Zhivago thing, but it's in France or Italy.
Bruges. It looks like Bruges.
Yes.
Something. It's something.
And they're
like
riding
that.
Around scooters, and Andy Taylor's barely in it. He always got the short end of the stick with Duran Duran videos, which I kind of understand, I guess, because he was, sadly, he was the least cute one. I'm just going to say.
Well, he was the one that, he was sort of the workhorse because he actually like played all of the guitar and was very much like, he wasn't behind a synthesizer. Yeah.
And I have talked to John Taylor about that when I did an interview for the 35th anniversary of Rio, where I asked him when they became heartthrobs, were they prepared for that kind of like intense Beatlemania style, boy band style attention? And he said what they weren't prepared for was jealousy within the group about like the rankings of who got the most screams, who got the most fan mail. And I imagine Andy Taylor was probably sitting around being pissed off.
Bummed,
He's not on the video much, and I do believe he is a workhorse in the video. I think he's like on the streets, like handing out flowers, like join la resistance.
Yes.
But the part of the video that annoys me the most is I'm like, does John Taylor not know the words to the song? Because at the end, they're all like kind of awkwardly dancing.
Yes.
They're like, revolution has happened. There's peace in France or wherever we're supposed to be. And the lyric goes, and a fire danced through the night. And when he says fire, or when the line that comes up fire, John Taylor holds up his hand, like he's like his whole hand, like he's saying the word five, like he's got five fingers up. Like, and I'm like, it's not five danced through the night.
It's fire.
Like, does John Taylor not even know the own words? Mm-hmm. This is in that blog post, so I'm not the only one who thought that. You got to look this up. So that was, you know, but every, I think every 80s band probably has a couple like videos that in retrospect don't hold up as well. Mm-hmm. And that would be Duran's, but most of them actually really do.
I love the Planet Earth video where they look like they're kind of like Hazy Fantasy. Like, it's,
oh my,
like,
God, don't get me started on Hazy Fantasy.
I love Hazy Fantasy.
Speaking of post-apocalyptic fashion thing. But anyway, mm-hmm. Yes, Planet Earth.
Yeah, like there's a lot of like beads and sashes and that kind of new romantic kind of tribalism. Like,
yes.
It's a lot of different influences that are like pulling the costumes together. And there's like a weird kind of a dancing. But yeah, I like that video. It's primitive.
Did you ever see the Danny Warhol spoof that and You Were the Last High? They did it almost. It's not spoof because spoof makes it seem that it's like a parody or mm-hmm. making fun. It's not. It's like, but it's exactly that. It starts off with not Courtney, but the other guy in the Danny Warhol's, like the close up of like the head in the clouds, mm-hmm. the way the Roger Taylor one started.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
It's exactly, they really, because that album, it was Welcome to the Monkey House, had been produced by Nick Rhodes. They were they were in their Duran phase.
That's amazing.
Unsurprisingly, it's for most people their least favorite Dandy Warhol's record. And for me, it's like 100% my favorite one.
The best.
Oh, speaking of post-apocalyptic, weird tribalism pirate videos, have you ever seen the Muscle Bound video by Spandau Ballet?
No.
Oh,
no.
My God.
I have to see it.
It makes the Wild Boys or Union of the Snake video look like a documentary. It's just like, so they're all dressed like weird pirates.
I love it.
It's an early video. It doesn't look like it costs that much money. Mm-hmm. And it's in the desert. And they're all sweaty. I love it. But it's like really like a strange introduction to Spandau Ballet. And it's like the first one I ever saw.
Yeah, I love Spandau Ballet too.
Oh, I adore them.
They're so great. I mean, all of those bands, like even like Human League, mm-hmm. they all kind of had similar hair and fashion. Like Human League before the girls.
Oh my God. Their eyes. Speaking of eyeliner.
So much eyeliner.
Eyeliner goals.
Yes.
I never got my eyeliner as good as those girls.
Those girls are so perfect with their short hair and the eyeliner. But even like when it's just Phil before, they're kind of a prog rock band. It's really interesting.
That's right, because they, Martin Ware, who I think broke off to do Heaven 17, mm-hmm. like the Being Boiled song mm-hmm. by Human League. Yeah, they started off as a really different thing, and so did Ultravox. Like, but then, yeah, they got poppier.
Very different.
And one thing that I think is interesting is the guy who directed, I'm a big music video director geek, mm-hmm. and Steve Barron, who he directed the Human League video for Don't You Want Me Baby, which a lot of people think kind of started the British invasion of the 80s.
Absolutely.
And he also directed the video for Ant Music.
Oh, I love that.
Which, you know, I'm a huge Adam Ant fan. Mm-hmm. And then he later, I mean, this guy, I don't know why they haven't given him an MTV Video Vanguard Award, because he directed, besides those two videos and a million other videos, he directed Billie Jean by Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. He directed, in the same year, Take On Me by A-ha and Money for Nothing by...
Oh, yeah. Those are very innovative, too.
Street.
Very different. Very innovative. But kind of using animation.
Animation. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed him once about the Billie Jean video. Mm-hmm. And the reason why Michael Jackson hired him was because of the Don't You Want Me video, because he liked how cinematic it looked.
Yeah.
And how it had, like, this kind of film noir quality.
It did.
And then the light-up tiles in the Billie Jean video, they were inspired by the light-up dance floor in the M music video.
Oh, okay. I
so
see that.
So it's all connected.
I see all that connection.
It's amazing.
The Human League thing is like, I really wanted to see the movie they're making.
Wait, yeah.
When in Don't You Want Me, like,
you got me excited for a minute. I thought, I was like, wait, there's a Human League movie?
No, there should be.
Is there going to be a Human League biopic? Like,
that would be good.
Who would play, you know, Phil? Oh my God.
Don't You Want Me seems like a movie they're making, or a coffee commercial they're making or something.
It was kind of a movie within a movie, because they showed like one of the guys like in a film editing bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the screening room watching the dailies in a very severe way. Like, they're not enjoying the dailies, but they're just watching them on their own.
So this is cool, because I remember when MTV first came out, like, again, going back to the idea that people can be resistant to change or think the things were best in their generation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't like MTV because they thought it was either squelching our imagination or the imaginations of like young people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, dude, music's supposed to, you're supposed to have pictures in your own head about, it's not supposed to tell you what the imagery should be, mm-hmm. which is bullshit. But also that they thought that music was becoming too image driven. Mm-hmm. And as a result, like bands that were less fashion-y or, you know, let's face it, less attractive, mm-hmm. older, whatever, you know, plainer.
Yeah.
That weren't going to get on board with all the MTV stuff, that they were going to fall by the wayside. There were some older bands that, you know, or bands that were more plain looking like ZZ Top or Tom Petty that mm-hmm. completely got on board and started making awesome videos, yeah. Peter Gabriel. Mm-hmm. But there were, you know, there were a lot of people that didn't like that era because they thought it was too image driven.
Right.
But I have never had a problem with having fashion
yeah.
and makeup and videos and all of that jazz completely intertwined with music for me. It's part of the fun.
It's part of the fun. And yeah, Human League was a good one because there were so many different ways that you could look. Like you could be sort of like the Phil, or you could be like the girls, yeah. you could be like the other guys. It's such a great, true. Great
Culture
great
Club
look.
Is another one oh, yes. as well. I mean, the first, speaking of Top of the Pops, the first time I ever saw Boy George was before MTV had the Do You Really Want to Hurt Me video. They were just showing like the Top of the Pops performance from mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And it starts up with a very close-up look on Boy George's face
yeah.
singing the sort of semi a cappella intro to that song. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I were watching and our minds were blown. We didn't know if it was a man or woman at first. Looked like a man. Kind of sounded like a man, but obviously makeup, long hair.
Beautiful, beautiful. Like, who is this? What is happening?
I just was like, I want to look like this person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the makeup was on point for sure.
So beautiful. And then I do like later iterations of Culture Club, like even into the Cold War, War, stupid. People are stupid.
Not their best lyric.
There's something like that's the same set as like Nikita from the Elton John.
Oh my God, yes. Well, it's interesting because you are wearing a Men at Work t-shirt today. And I was just thinking about my Men at Work t-shirt, which I have, which is It's a Mistake, mm-hmm. which was their song about the Cold War. Mm-hmm. That was a real theme in the 80s. It was like, I actually, my friend made a playlist that was all about like Cold War 80s panic songs or just like panic anxiety songs like Pressure by Billy Joel.
Oh, right.
It's a Mistake by Men at Work and Two Tribes by Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
So
and
I
like
love.
99 Luft Ballons was also about
yeah.
like a lot of songs about nuclear war.
Right.
I guess it was on people's minds. I'm wondering why we're not having more, but it was fun. These songs didn't depress me. I was
yeah.
watching, listening to Two Tribes and enjoying that song. I wonder why I feel like we should have songs like that now, like songs about like, you know, Party at Ground Zero, like things are going to hell. But 1999 was a song about that.
That's true.
Like that was a real, and there were a lot of songs about like Russia and mm-hmm. and war, and the war song by Culture Club wasn't their greatest moment.
Mm-hmm.
War is stupid, people are stupid, not the most eloquent lyric, but yeah. you know, I liked that song.
But it's a fun song.
It's not untrue.
I also like the brief Church of the Poison Mind doctor's like jacket. Like what is the doctor's jackets, like the white Helen Terry and
Helen
Boy
Terry,
George and
yeah.
the Dr. White sort of outfits.
I don't remember that. Weren't they on a plane in that video?
I think they had like, they were taking like, they had flash bulbs.
Yes.
And taking pictures with mm-hmm. like old flash bulbs exploding.
I remember being so mad at MTV because they teased, this was clickbait before clickbait was a thing. They were like, you know how they used to have news breaks in between videos sometimes? And they were like, coming up after the break, Culture Club gets a new singer. And I was like, no!
No!
What the hell? Culture Club can't exist without Boy George. What the news story was that they had recruited Helen Terry
yeah.
to sing on the second album. And
yeah.
she was a big part of that era. But I was like, when they came back and Martha Quinn or whoever it was like, Culture Club have recruited her. I was like, F you, MTV.
Total clickbait.
It was total clickbait.
Before it was the clickbait.
I was very upset for like 5 minutes.
Do you ever go back and watch? Like, I'll go back and I'll look at like the curation of the 120 minutes videos. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll like, there's like a big like website that shows you all the links. You can basically recreate 120 mm-hmm. minutes on through YouTube.
Yes, I've seen that site.
It's so good.
Yeah, the person, and it's not like, the person who did it just did it as a labor of love, which
yeah.
is same as the person who wrote like a 5,000 page blog with screenshots of the new Moon on Monday video.
Mm-hmm.
The internet's great. I love the internet.
I love it. But it's such a great thing because you can actually, and then it'll actually even direct you like on YouTube to the clips of like the between, you know, so that you'll have like the live performances. Like I got to see one with the Afghan Whigs were kind of hosting and
oh,
also
wow.
did live performances. It's a perfectly preserved like time capsule.
I loved 120 minutes. It was, you know, so important to me and kind of wish it was still around, mm-hmm. you know, if MTV was what it used to be. But the only thing I had a problem with it is when MTV started, mm-hmm. And it was mostly all these like weird and androgynous and eyeliner wearing British bands that we've just been talking about. It's like the entire channel was 120 minutes. Like, yes, everything on it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was British and a lot, mm-hmm, of it was new wavy stuff. And then, you know, as MTV changed and became bigger, but also when they started compartmentalizing for advertising reasons their shows, and they had like Yo MTV Raps, Headbangers Ball, mm-hmm, 120 minutes. It was like, okay, now the majority of MTV during the day is playing, you know, not that I don't like Tiffany or Debbie Gibson, but stuff like that.
Yeah.
And now if I want to see my weird gothy new wave British music, I got to stay up till midnight on, yeah, a Sunday when, mm-hmm, I got school tomorrow. You know, it was sort of like this marginalization of like, let's put all the weird music on at this like weird hour.
Yeah.
When most people aren't awake. And, you know, the fact that MTV even existed in its original form and that that stuff was being played during prime time.
Yeah.
It was a good time to be alive. It was. Say that.
It was like on the
Our
Sunday
music
night.
Was the best. No,
Our music was the best music. No, it was like Sunday night because you would watch like, what is it, Liquid Television before.
Yes, that so was
you
good times.
Yeah, you would see like Cintra Wilson do her sort of animation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was always very like Aeon Flux, very like early, yeah, anime, very strange like animation. Then it would be 120 minutes.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people, like if you ever read the book about MTV, I Want My MTV, that Craig Marks and I forget who the other person was, but it's like an oral history of MTV.
Mm-hmm.
They ended it in 91. And this movie that I'm in, I Want My MTV, a documentary that's like the origin story of MTV, also ends around 1990. I Want My MTV, the book, ended in 91 for a very specific reason, because that's the year that the real world started.
Oh, okay.
So they were using that as a marker of MTV, you know, kind of going downhill and going into reality programming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll be the first person to say I think 80s MTV was better than 90s MTV. But 90s MTV, I don't think that it should get the short end of the stick and people say, oh, all MTV sucked in the 90s. It was still putting out some really good programming, yeah, and music-oriented programming.
Yeah, really.
Like the Liquid Television stuff. Daria.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is my spirit animal.
Or Beavis and Butthead.
Beavis and Butthead, definitely, were amazing. And, mm-hmm, they were presenting music.
Yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
Like some, even if Beavis and Butthead had your video on saying that it sucked, mm-hmm, you got a record sales,
yeah,
spike from it.
Absolutely.
Rob Zombie like owes his career, not his entire career, but he got such a spike. He's told this, that like basically White Zombie had an album that had been out for about a year,
mm-hmm,
hadn't been selling. You know, selling modestly. A couple of the videos got on Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead were like, this is cool. This is the best thing ever. And their sales went through the roof, and,
yeah,
they ended up having a platinum album. So MTV was really still moving the needle. Even TRL, it was still like interactive.
Mm-hmm.
It was kids saying like, I really love music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stand in Times Square to like request my favorite video.
Yeah.
All and of course, Unplugged.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So
Unplugged
important.
Is important. So important. And so, I mean, I think, yeah, it definitely was still all about music then.
Yeah.
Which is
and
so
it
great.
Was still something that kids watch. And I'm sure kids, I know kids still watch MTV now, but they're watching it for the reality shows. And,
yeah.
And I'm a huge reality TV freak. So as you know, so I'm not like against,
mm-hmm,
that kind of programming, but I do miss the old MTV. Or it goes back to what you were asking me earlier. Like for us, that was our curation. That was us saying like, this is cool. The, mm-hmm, VJ says it's cool. You're going to like Smile Ballet. You're going to, you know, we're going to expose you to stuff.
Yeah.
And I trusted MTV as a source.
Well, now you are so many places. Where can people, are you on the socials? Are what,
oh,
what
I'm
is
on
your
the socials.
Platforms? What are your platforms?
Well, where I work is I'm the music editor at Yahoo. So that's yahoo.com/music. And, you know, I have interviews and I recap all, speaking of reality TV, we, mm-hmm, got American Idol coming up again next year. Voice coming up real soon. The Masked Singer's coming back. Martin,
yeah, coming soon.
Won't be the same without the poodle, but, aww, you know, I'm excited about those new costumes. The egg.
Yeah, the egg looks really good.
The tiger. the
so
fly,
good.
I believe,
yeah,
the butterfly. So I, that's a part of my world because I'm not snobby. That's the thing. Is,
yeah,
I like
good.
A lot of things. So that's my main job. Then I also have a radio show on Sirius XM, which you had. I was honored to have you be a co-host on the other day.
It.
And that's Volume West.
Yes.
Volume is a Sirius XM channel, channel 106, if you have Sirius XM. It might sound like an odd concept. It's talk radio, but it's about music.
Mm-hmm.
But it's for music, Matt Pinfield types like ourselves,
yeah,
who want to, it's interviews, it's talking about music subjects of the day. There's a lot of nostalgia. We talk about new music as well. So that's on Mondays at the moment, from 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. And it's the only volume show that operates out of LA, which is why it's called Volume West. So I try to, evangelize LA a lot because I'm from here. I don't know if you knew that, but I was born and raised here, and I'm very proud of LA. I'm not one of the, I get very almost kind of defensive when people, you know, shit all over LA or say it's plastic or whatever. So those are my jobs. And then on the socials, it's just Lindsay Parker, L-Y-N-D-S-E-Y Parker on Twitter and Instagram. On Facebook, it's Linsanity. Facebook.com/Linsanity. And I put all my stuff on my own website, which is linsanity.com as well. So I'm pretty easy to find.
Yeah.
I pretty much live on Instagram, which is a bad habit. But, you know, I think maybe Instagram is the new MTV. That's how to have this stuff delivered to you.
Then you can see it all. And then, yeah, I do so much on Insta.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's so fun.
Absolutely.
I love it. Keeps me young. As do you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, I love Lindsay. Talking about all this 80s stuff with you. I'll
it's
do
so
it anytime.
Good. Yes. All thanks right. a lot.
Thanks.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Today, we talk to Ronald McDonkey, also known at Ronald McDonkey on Instagram. He's all over my Instagram, and he's amazing. Now, I met you on Instagram making amazing Photoshops. What do you call, is it Photoshop? I think it's art. It's digital art. It's painting in a way. It's also photography in a way.
They're collages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's of like...
just... twist at pop culture.
People, there's certain people that kind of seem to come up a lot, like the Golden Girls.
Yes, the Golden Girls. Well, husband's in love with the Golden Girls.
Well, so. They're all great.
Yes. It's fun to put them in different scenarios, yeah?
Yes.
It's a great thing. I'm really happy doing it. It makes me laugh all the time.
I really laugh, too. And it's a great thing to see, like, the juxtaposition is what's so funny, because you'll take something like, you know, the image of something that you know, and then you'll marry it with another image that is completely outside of the realm of, like, what's happening. And it really is funny.
It is funny. I swear I'm laughing all the time. There's so many things you can do, you know?
Yeah.
It's endless.
Yeah.
There's no process to it. Like, I just do it, you know? It's just, I don't actually think about it when I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens.
Yeah.
You know? There's, like, I don't know, my iPad has, like, 40,000 photos, and I just kind of... just I'm cleaning up things and looking at things, and it's just something comes to me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool, though. But, it's just like you said, it's just a weird juxtaposition that actually sometimes really works.
Works so well.
Yeah, sometimes not so well, but still it makes you think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It always is really entertaining, and it's kind of like, you think about, like, the different ways for somebody to take a photograph, and, like, actually it's limited.
Yeah.
If you think about, there's only really... a few different postures that people really take pictures in.
Yes.
And then, so if you maybe cross-reference those with all of the images that are out there world, you can really, like, actually, it's really funny.
Yeah, it is funny. And like the Golden Girls, you'll never see them another way except for, you
right.
know. I just love the idea of seeing something totally different, you know? Like Marilyn Monroe said, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You'll never see another live photo of her, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
Or a new photo shoot or whatever, unless they, you know. But it's cool to put her in a, you know, not necessarily her, but something like that into a strange scenario,
yeah.
you know?
Like, yeah, the images, especially, yeah, of there's certain people are finite. Like, whether it's the Golden Girls or Marilyn Monroe or, you know, somebody who's dead.
Yes.
Then it's, like, finite. Or capturing a certain age of somebody like Honey Boo Boo.
Honey Boo Boo.
Something
or
like
June.
That. Yeah, or Mama June.
Yeah.
And then putting them into a context that is, like, totally out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, but it could happen.
Yeah, it could happen.
It could happen in another dimension, another reality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I constantly find myself thinking about, you know, silly things like that.
Yeah.
It never really, you know, if I do think about what I want to do, it never turns out the way I want it to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like, it's like intuitively, like you just sort of feel it and like you just start making it and then it happens.
Yeah.
What was the first one that you ever did?
I think it was Jared Leto.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I put him in like a jock strap.
Oh, cute.
It was cute. It actually was really cute. I don't know. I think it was Madonna, actually, the first one that actually reposted my art.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't, you know, it was a strange situation because viral? Yeah, it went viral and it even made the news, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like Madonna posts a flashback selfie of herself laying in a bathtub full of donuts. I'm like, really? Like, uh-huh. But it's interesting that it, you know, that people actually thought that it might be real.
Right.
You know?
Right. That's sort of like the danger of deep fakes that people are upset about. Like, oh, what could happen?
Yes.
You know, but it's like, well, you know, we've had it with stuff like this, with like Photoshop. You could be able sort of like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, I really would have a hard time thinking that Madonna would ever lay in a bed of donuts or a bathtub full of donuts.
I re-looked at that recently, mm-hmm. and it does kind of look real.
Like it looks real.
Yeah.
Like she might do that.
Yeah, just, you know, for an ironic purpose or whatever.
Like,
yeah.
I don't even think Madonna's ever eaten a donut.
Probably not.
I have a really hard time thinking that. Although, during the Truth or Dare period, she did eat an awful lot of Mike and Ike's and hot tamales.
How do you know that?
Well, if you're watching the movie, you see the packages, and also she's picking it out of her teeth a lot.
Really?
It seems to be that I do remember that she was eating a lot, maybe lemon heads. You know those, there's
yeah,
a certain
I
kind
do.
Of like...
What, they're Airheads or something
or
like that.
Airheads yeah. or some kind, I don't know if it was like a sour candy, but I do think that she does like a hot tamale.
Did you rewatch that movie or something?
I've watched it a number of times.
Yeah, me
too. I do like a, I like that movie because she's so...
Vulgar.
It's vulgar, but it's also so constructed. Like.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think she's friends with those dancers.
No.
But that she's like making them be in bed with her and
yeah.
like
yeah,
playing
yeah.
all these like games with the Avian bottle
yeah.
and stuff is so forced. Like somebody is putting a gun to your head and making you be friends with Madonna.
Huh.
That's what it seems yeah. like to me.
When I was little, you know, whatever, when that 15, 16, when that came out, and the idea of Madonna was so different from what I think about her now.
Yeah.
You know, that like slutty Marilyn Monroe thing was
yeah.
so awesome for, you know,
yeah.
for me.
Powerful, yeah.
Yeah, it was, it's not, but she is nothing like that, you know?
Right.
But it was just like, what a character, I guess.
Yeah, but I was also very impressed by what she was able to accomplish historically. Like, if you
yeah.
think about what she was able to do for gay men
yes.
and AIDS,
yeah.
and to think about the acceptance that we collectively as a society had around gayness because of her.
Oh, yeah.
You know, is really, truly a remarkable achievement. And I do notice a sense of how homophobia was before Madonna
uh-huh.
as opposed to after.
Yeah.
You know, she did usher in an era of, you know, a real sense of gay pride
mm-hmm.
that came from within, that was very authentic
mm-hmm.
and really purposeful.
Rebellious.
Rebellious.
That was awesome.
And growing up, being queer and seeing her was incredibly empowering,
yeah.
you know? So I think that, and I don't think that she's been given due for that. Like, she hasn't had that sort of acclaim that she should have for doing all she did.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. You
yeah.
know, I think that she opened the doors for a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of these newer artists. And
so much.
Yeah.
But it is not appreciated for it. And now there's a kind, I mean, I have a few different views about her. I think, like, she's unwilling to let go of whatever was her youthful, like, expression of fame.
Mm.
And so she sort of wants to be in the same category, you know, that there's issues with, like, letting go of that sexuality or letting go of that dynamism.
Yeah. We went and saw that concert, like I said earlier, and mm-hmm. I love Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
She holds a very special spot in my heart.
Yes.
But there was still some of that stuff, like you say, mm-hmm. she was holding on to.
Yeah.
And some of it's organic and natural,
yeah.
but there's some of it that's kind of forced, and it's,
yeah.
it's kind of, you know.
Well, it's got to be hard, and
yeah.
I think that you know, she's worth so much more
yeah.
than what even she herself considers.
Yeah.
You know, that she can move into the space of, like, timelessness and be, you know...
She's Madonna.
She's Madonna.
Yeah, she could do, you know? That's weird that she's continuing to hold on to that.
Yeah.
It's okay, though. I mean, But she can do what she wants.
She can do what she wants. And there's also, it's like when I think of her, there's no competition. When people say, oh, it's like Lady Gaga's coming for her or like Beyonce's coming for her. Well, well, not really, because it's like they're like her children.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost as if, you know, their presence is phenomenal because of what she was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting thing to think about gayness, especially about Madonna and gayness. I think she contributed a lot more than people realize.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to go see the Blonde Ambition tour.
You did?
Yeah, I was in Oakland at the Oakland Coliseum when she came.
Beastie Boys opened?
Who opened?
Beastie Boys.
Beastie Boys. No, no, no. You know who it was?
Oh, wait, it's Technotronic.
It was Technotronic.
Yes.
Pump up the jam. Pump it up. Wow. It was so exciting.
That was so cool, right?
It was so cool. And so that period of time, and I was with my friend who's just had come out as a lesbian. And so she was like very fresh baby dyke. And like we were all like so excited to be in the presence of Madonna and all the dancers and how phenomenal the show was. And then to be able to see it later in the documentary, which I think is a real front runner to reality television.
Did you have good seats?
We were in the pit. We were like totally in like everybody was kind of like crowded in the on the floor. At least it was on the floor.
Yeah.
But there was no seats there. It's just like
tickets were like what, $50?
Yeah, probably. Huh. Probably.
Yeah.
Probably $49, $50.
Yeah, this
like
new
that.
Show is like they're like $700 for the tickets. It's crazy.
It's well, it's because she's doing such small venues.
It's beautiful though. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
It's gorgeous. It's not holograms, but it's screens. Mm-hmm. So it makes it, you know, it comes up and it makes it look like she's actually like in a church.
Oh wow!
Or then she's like, you know, in a tunnel or whatever. It's very neat actually.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's really.
They
cool.
had some old music in there, like, but it was reworked to sound. Like it fit with the new music, you know what
good.
I mean? Yeah, it was very cool, actually.
That's exciting.
It was exciting. She didn't come on until midnight, and she was supposed to come on at like 8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there was, it was like the third night of the show, so there was like some technical difficulties or whatever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, and it was a, what was it, a no-phone show? So you were forced to sit there and like, you know, be with your neighbor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Which was strange.
Would they take your phones in the front?
Yeah, well, no, they don't actually take your phones. They put it in a pouch and it locks.
Yes.
Yeah. And then afterwards, you know, you go.
Then it opens, yeah. I work in a place, sometimes they do that in... certain comedy clubs, they'll take your phone and, or you put them in a bag.
It was actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps the performer for sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I think for her, it's like to keep the images, let's just keep them here. You know, instead of like,
oh, of course.
You know, all the different iterations they would be.
And people like me that would re-Photoshop it to something different. It was a little strange. You're sitting there for 4 hours and you're like,
Yeah, I don't have my phone. It's weird.
I don't have a watch.
Yeah.
I don't have anything
it's like,
with
what,
me.
What do you do?
Yeah. So you're forced to, you know, look around and
talk to people. In the age before, remember we used to not have phones and we would have to like find out about stuff in the newspaper?
Oh my gosh. We were just talking about that, I don't know, like a day ago about how the rotary phones, remember the rotary phones?
I would dial it with a pencil so that I could save my nails.
And secretary. Lily Tomlin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doing it with a pencil.
Yes.
And what's the character's name with the switchboard?
The ringy dingy.
Yes.
Yeah. What is her name?
I forgot.
I love her.
I think it's Edith Ann, but that's a little girl.
Yeah, it is Edith Ann. No, Edith Ann was the little girl on the
Edith Ann is
the
little girl in the big chair. Lily's
I
great.
Loved her. When I was a little boy, that was so fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. That was like the definition of cool. You
know? And all her characters.
All her characters.
All that she can do.
Yeah. She's I was too special. Young to understand it, but I remember being a little boy and watching her walk on that chair and thinking, I want to be her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
so cool.
Or sit with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kid I want to play with. she's a lot of fun.
Aren't you friends with her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a lot of fun. Oh, wait. I have the character here. Ernestine. Thank you.
Yes.
That's right. This is the telephone operator with a switchboard and
that hairdo.
Yeah. Very, like, victory curls.
Yes.
And very iconic.
Actually, I think I saw a reboot of that recently, no?
Oh, probably at the Laugh-In event. I was there. It was the big Laugh-In event that they did where they were honoring Lily. It's 50 years of Laugh-In.
Huh.
A lot of 50 years of things this year.
Oh, yeah,
well,
you
I'm
were
50.
On that. Yes.
Laugh-In is 50.
Yeah.
Gay Pride is 50.
Huh.
Other stuff is 50, too, I'm sorry. 50 Cent is 50.
Yeah.
Viddy.
Viddy.
It's all, I mean, all of the celebrities. What celebrity is the most fun for you to Photoshop in?
Oh, Mariah Carey.
Oh, yeah, Mariah Carey's a good one.
Oh, my God, I love putting her in real situations.
It's really funny because she's so dreamlike.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
She's such a diva.
Diva, yes.
And so dreamlike, yeah, that there's nothing about her that's ever ordinary.
Yes.
Like, nothing about her life that would ever touch the ground.
Everything about her is so valuable.
Yeah.
Yes.
And elevated.
Yes.
And there's something very, I mean,
people love it. They get a kick when I put her just in real, like, you know.
Because you just don't think of her as living a real life.
No, you don't actually.
At all.
She seems very unattainable.
It's in a different era of show business, though. Like, now a lot of celebrities are, you know, kind of like, you know, they're accessible. Like, celebrity nowadays is kind of, everybody's doing something weird and rotten and gross and whatever.
Yeah, that is the truth.
But like with somebody like Mariah Carey, you just never even, you know, she never has to do the sort of like the dailiness of everyday life or whatever.
It's funny, man. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love the comments you get. People want to put me in jail. Or you should be dead. Oh. Or you're doing God's work.
Yeah.
That's the exact opposite, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
I love it when people say stuff like
that. It's really great.
Yeah.
It's really great. You got to have like a show, like a museum show.
Yeah,
you gotta
actually
work on that.
I started kind of curating an idea there for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I bought press.
Mm-hmm.
A press, so we're going to start making t-shirts.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I am in the process of making my website, obviously, yeah.
That's so great.
Yes.
I love the shirt that you made me that has Tom Cruise in the heels, and he's like...
Garter belts.
It's a garter belt, and his face is so perfect.
Oh, he's beautiful.
He's so
good. In
that
picture.
He's so good. Tom Cruise is a good one because, again, it's like this artifice of celebrity that really rules that image. So when you flip the image and put it into something else, that's why it's so powerful.
You know what was who was really funny who reposted my artwork was Snoop Dogg.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah. So funny.
Because you never, ever would think of him like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me actually like him so much more.
Yeah, he has a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
He really will laugh at something, like, you know, about himself, too, which
it
is really
funny.
Entertaining.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It was really cool.
It's really cool.
And he looked beautiful, too, actually.
Yeah. Gorgeous. And it's so, but it's great when somebody has a sense of humor and they can really see. I mean, that's what I love it when you do me. It's, like, so fun.
You're my favorite. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. You are my favorite to do.
Oh,
you work in so many things.
That's good.
I have so many of you. It's unbelievable.
I love it. Yeah. I post a lot of them on my Insta, which is it's so fun because it's like you always find like these situations that are so different. Like it's so outrageous. It's really
that
great.
That hairdo one recently.
Yeah. That's
that
a good
was
one.
Beautiful, actually.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah. That should
really
be like a poster or something.
Really dreamlike.
Yeah.
And really like actually just like this is real.
I was surprised by that one, too, because it was just like a 2-minute one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like some take, you know, several, you know, I have to come back to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that one, it was just like, you know, a couple minutes. And I thought, wow, this is really actually really pretty.
It's art.
Yes.
Well, you're an artist.
Thank you.
Now, where can people see it like on the regular? I love, well, you definitely on Instagram. So what is your tags on Instagram?
At Ronald McDonkey.
Well, thank you for joining me today. You were great.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Kat Hong and original music by Garrison Starr.
Erios. Powered by Acast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.